A very good morning to you. It's a Monday morning, the 20th of October, 2025. My Monday never get blue. What about yours? Do you have a blue Monday? Even this time now, my Monday is quite good. Why? Ask me why. Because, you know, we beat Liverpool yesterday. So, yep. Yes, that's why my Monday today is not blue at all. Good morning to you. Welcome to your favorite station, Eagle FM. So how are you wherever you find yourself in this beautiful, beautiful land of the brave? Are you doing well? What did you do in the weekend? You know, how did you rest? Because the weekend is supposed to rest so that when we start a new week, we are absolutely, you know, vigorated, ready to face the week again with vuma and energy. So, and if you were not, so how do you start the week then? Good morning and welcome. This is Unpacking the Day. My name is Mike Oshoveli. And this is your daily dose of what is really going on in business, politics, and economics. So every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, trends, and numbers making the headlines. So we keep it clear, a little witty, and always curious. So asking the question that matter and give you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segments don't necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM. We are here to unpack what others are saying and spark meaningful conversation so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your space. This is your platform to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the stories. So a very good morning and welcome, and thanks for choosing Eagle FM and choosing to join us at this time. You are most welcome, and it's our privilege to keep you company during this time of the day, of the morning. So as usual, we start with what happened in the course of history in Africa. So any significant event that happened on this day in Africa. So welcome to the segment where we breathe life into history one day at a time. Now, on the 20th of October 2011, the long-time Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi was captured and killed by rebels by the rebel forces in his hometown, Sirte, making the end of his 42-year rule in Libya. So his death followed months of uprising and civil war in Libya, part of the broader wave of the Arab Spring across the Northern Africa and the Middle East. So while his removal was the turning point, Libya thereafter faced a complex transition with ongoing instability. And on the same year, 2011, on this day, South Sudan officially became the newest country in Africa after gaining independence from Sudan. So this followed years of civil war and tension between the northern and southern regions, with both sides fighting over issues including religion, oil resources, because there's also oil in Sudan, and governance. So South Sudan independence marked the end of one of Africa's longest-running conflict. So, but the new nation continued to face internal challenges, such as civil war, ethnic strife, and poverty. So, yeah. And on the very same day, on this day, on October 20th, 1962, the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, UNECA, opened its door in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. So the UNECA was established to promote the economy, I mean, the economic and social development of African countries. Over the decades, UNECA has played a pivotal role in shaping the continent's development agenda, including initiatives for regional integration, trade facilitation, and sustainable development. And on the same day, on this day, in 1966, Kwame Nkrumah, the first president of Ghana, was overthrown in a military coup. Nkrumah was instrumental in the country's independence from Britain and had a pan-African vision. So, however, his regime faced economic challenges and political unrest. So the coup marked a turning point in Ghana's political history, leading to the series of military and also civilian governments. So Ghana would later become one of the continent's stable democracies. So yeah, basically that's what we have for you on this day, in this segment of On This Day in Africa. So welcome if you're just joining us. And our thought for the day today, the Monday, the 20th of October, our thought for the day is we make more enemies by what we say than friends by what we do. We make more enemies by what we say than friends by what we do. Now, this proverb means that our words can often cause more trouble or create enemies more easily than our action can build friendship. So in other words, careless or harsh speech can offend and alienate people, leading to an empty, while even a generous or kind action may not always result in strong friendships. So it highlights the power of words to hurt and create conflict more readily than action to foster trust and friendship. So this proverb advises caution in speech because verbal mistakes or insult can damage relationship more quickly and deeply than action can repair or create bonds. So our thought of the day, we make more enemies by what we say than friends by what we do. So in your choices today, your decision that you're making, make sure that, you know, what you say, it helps you to make more friends rather than actually enemies. So good morning and welcome. What can you expect today in the show here on Unpacking the Day? What are we unpacking today? So, well, there is a story in today's, make sure subscribe for the Villager, you know, the Villager e-newspaper, for to be able to get your copy every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. So all what you need to do is just send your WhatsApp message to this number, 081-241-44. With your email and with your name and your email. So that's all what you need to do, and you will be receiving a digital copy of the e-newspaper The Villager every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. So, and in today's edition there is a story about a tundra potato harvest. So the angle that we're looking at, the angle that we are unpacking of this story is, can Namibia feed itself? You know, can Namibia feed itself? The tundra potato harvest and what it means for our future. That's what we're looking at. We're going to go into a story and really, you know, analyze whether Namibia can feed itself. Now, there's a new proposed law. A new proposed law is before Parliament, promising to speed up the process of redistributing farmland to the right to right actually the wrong of colonial and apartheid history. That's another story that we're going to check. You don't want to miss that. And if we have time, then we're going to look to another story in today's edition, private partnership, private-public partnership investment, electrifying 257 homes in Caribbean settlement. So we're going to look at that. We're going to pick an angle that we're going to look at that. So stay tuned. As you can see, there's so much to talk about and to unpack. So let's do that after this.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the I.
Very good morning. Very good morning, Namibia. It's a Monday morning. And to welcome back to Unpacking the Day. If you're joining us, you are on Eagle FM and you are just tuning to Unpacking the Day. We're coming to you live from the Ondangwa studio. So this is your daily dose where we dive deep into the stories shaping our lives. So this morning, we are talking potatoes. You heard me. You heard that right. Potatoes. Eh? But before you roll your eyes, hear me out, okay? Before you roll your eyes, hear me out. The humble potato is at the center. It's at the center of much bigger story, okay? So, what about food security, jobs, and the country's future? So there's a bigger picture to this, to the story than just, you know, potato that we're going to talk about. Now, this week, according to the article by Eloise Shimi, in today's edition of The Villager. So this week, the Etunda Green Scheme in Rakana began harvesting what they expect to be we'll come back.
If you've reached that stage in life where you are tired of everything, where each day is just routine, dah yammer me oh. No, seriously, I am genuinely sorry for you, cause you clearly haven't been polanified. Like, boring day at the spun. Polanify your lunch hour with a delicious Polana curry. Chewing through yet another stale sandwich. Polanify your burger with a little mac and cheese. Tired of chewing the same shandy? Polanify your munchies with air-fried Polana pasta chips. Come on, life's too short for boring. Polanify every moment with Pasta Polana, a proud product of Namib Mills.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the U in UNAM is you.
Well, definitely. All right. So good morning and welcome back. And we're talking about potato. Remember, I said we're going to talk about potato. And today, this week, and this is a story in today's Villager, in today's newspaper of the Villager. Make sure that you subscribe to the Villager to be able to read these stories and many more other stories in today's edition. So this week, the Etunda Green Scheme in Rakana began harvesting what they expect to be 400 tons of potatoes. Now that sounds like a lot, isn't it? Yet when you compare that to Namibia's annual demand of about 30,000 tons, the picture starts to change actually. So that's why we're asking the question, can Namibia feed itself? Can Namibia feed itself? Imagine, 30,000 tons, that's the demand. So what the Etunda can produce is only about 400 tons of potato. Now, only a third of the potato we eat come from the local soil. So the rest are imported mostly from South Africa. Now, so this morning, we're asking, can a scheme like Etunda help us become self-reliant? Or are we still too reliant on imports to feed ourselves? That's our question. So, can a scheme like Etunda really help us to become self-sufficient? Yeah? Or we can go on, or we're still actually too reliant on import to feed ourselves? So, as I said, this is a story in today's edition of The Villager by Louis Shimi. So, let us start at the ground level, okay? For those who don't know, you might just hearing Etunda. Where is this, okay? Etunda sits in the Osana region, around 150 kilometers west of Oshakati, if you're driving from Oshakati side. It's one of Namibia's so-called Green Scheme farms. So government-supported irrigation project. These are government-supported irrigation project aimed at boosting local food productions. And also, it was meant for creating rural jobs. So that's the aim. We should never forget what is the aim of this kind. It's actually boosting local food productions and creating rural jobs. Now, the goal was simple. The goal was simple when this idea started or thought when it became a goal that we should be able to implement. The goal was very simple: make the desert green, make people work, and make Namibia feed itself. So that's the goal. Now this season, they have planted potatoes across 22 hectares. Out of that, they expect about 400 tons. Well, of course, that's not a small achievement. I mean, it's not a small achievement, especially since potatoes need just the right condition. So, according to the article, it needs just the right condition, not too hot, not too cold, and certainly not too frosty. We don't have frost in Namibia. So luckily, a Rakana mild climate works in their favor. Okay? So the weather condition in Rakana really work in their favor. So Etunda also grow maize and mangoes, and plans are reportedly underway to add more processing facilities, like juicing plant, and to add more value locally. Now, so when you, on paper, things look promising, but it is where we start actually unpacking the layers. Now, this is where now we're going to start to unpack the layers, okay? We're now go look at things between, the headlines. So now, let's look at the bigger picture first, okay? So, the Namibia total potato demand is around 30%. Not 30%, it's around 30,000 tons a year, okay? so valued at, and that's valued at about 246 million. Okay, 30,000 ton a year, valued at 246 million. Now, but local farms supply only about 34% of that, you know, of that 30,000. Only 34%. Roughly it's about 8,200 tons. All right? Now, that leaves two-thirds coming from outside our borders. Two-thirds of that, it's coming from outside of our borders. Now, think about that now. Every time we buy potato, every time we buy potatoes in the shop, there's a two in three chances that they are traveled hundreds of kilometers from tables in South Africa before landing in ours. So that's a lot of money. More than 160 million per year. That's a lot of money flowing out of Namibia just for one product. And that's just one product. 160 million per year for one product, a potato. So that's, I don't know how you think, but that's very, very, very serious. Now, the whole question here, Nim, and I want you to get it right. The whole point here is not just about potatoes, okay? And the interest of this story is not just about potato. It's about dependence. It's about dependence. So, in a world where global supply chain can be easily disrupted. So we know that by fuel prices, by drought, by conflict, even by politics, you know, Trump comes on and things change. So the heavy reliance on import can make us vulnerable. So this is the problem here. This is the issue here, you know. It's about dependence. And 160 million per year flowing out of Namibia just for one, and that's just for one product. So a tundra's harvest, you know, when you read it, it's not just about the crop, you know, it's a small test. I think for me, that's a small test of whether the Green Scheme's idea is living up to its promise. Eh? So I think that's what we should look at. We should look at the underlying issues, if you like. You know, like I said, it's not just about potatoes, but it's about the dependency. So now let's get real, okay? Green schemes were launched to fight unemployment. Okay? Were launched to fight unemployment to improve our food security. So in theory, they should be, now that's why I said in theory, they should be buzzing with activity. Yeah? They should be buzzing with activity, providing steady jobs to the people and also producing enough food to feed the whole region. Not only the region, then the whole country. They should be. So in the story, it said, in the article, it said it hired about 40 temporary workers to help with the potato harvest. Now, that's good for those employed, even if it's for a short term. But there is this uncomfortable question still. After harvest, what happened to them? What happened to them? Remember, as I said, they were launched to fight unemployment and improve our food security. Are they fulfilling that? Now, when we look at the seasonal work, of course, it helps put cash in someone's pocket, but it doesn't solve now the long-term joblessness. It doesn't. So, and Namibia's unemployment rate remain painfully higher, very high, especially among the youth. So can a green scheme like a Tunda, be more than just seasonal employers who can just employ about 40 people to, you know, for harvesting? Can we look at that, talking about fighting unemployment? Can it be? So, and then there is an issue. There's also other challenges, okay? Then there's other challenges of equipment. That sounds too familiar, isn't it? Challenges of equipment. Now, the farm says they can't harvest all their field in one day because of limited machinery. And that's familiar story across many Namibian farms. We have heard that in East Kavango and West Kavango about equipment. So, yeah. So it's always, when you look at this, think of that. There's always this huge potential, but small resources. We just put in not good enough. We just put in small enough to make a little bit of a noise, but actually not good enough to actually maximize the potential that is there. And one might ask, you might ask, what is holding us back? Really, what is holding us back? And that's the question maybe that you should be able to look at as well. What is holding us back? Is it funding? Remember now, the demand is 30,000, and how 160 million that we pay out to South Africa every year. So what is holding us back from actually maximizing the huge potential that we have? Is it funding? Is it management? Or is it policy? What is it? What is it? So now, maybe let's talk money. Let's talk money, because potato farming is not cheap. According to, you know, to those who, the other time I put, we were talking about Emily. I brought in Emily and we talk about that. So it's not cheap. So farmers need capital for seed, fertilizers, and pesticides. How do you call those? Pesticides. Whoa, my mouth is dry. Yeah. So the pesticides. So it's not cheap, you know. And we will come back and get into this after this. We need to pay the bills. So that we can go ahead. All right, stay tuned.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
All right, welcome back. And we are talking about a harvest that... that the Tunda expect to do about 400 tons of potatoes. Now we unpacking that. So, and I was saying, let's talk about the money. And we earlier said, I mentioned that farming, according to the expert, potato farming is not something, it's not cheap. There are a lot of things that you need, seed, fertilizers, and pesticides, all that. The farm manager at Etunda has pointed out that these inputs make potato farming actually a serious investment. So not something, you know, a small-scale farmers can easily, you know, jump into. And that's why probably you have so many small-scale farmers not engaging in potato farming. So, but here's the trick, okay? Oh, here's the thing. So if it's so expensive to produce locally, imported potatoes will likely stay cheaper, isn't it? That make it harder for Namibian producers actually to compete without some form of, let's say, government support or maybe smart marketing. So, well, some argue that subsidies or tax break, I think, could help local farmers scale up. So if there could be subsidies or tax break, maybe that would help local farmers actually to scale up. Others saying, well, the answer lies in efficiency. Better irrigation, smarter crop rotations, you know, even cooperative, you know, farming models. Yeah? So, but what is the solution? What is the solution? There's one fact, though. There's one fact stand, from my point of view. There's one fact stand. Until we produce more food locally, well, Namibia will keep paying other country to feed us. That's a fact. So until we produce more food locally, so we will keep paying other countries to feed us. How does this sound to you? How does this sound? That we will keep paying other countries actually to feed us. We can't feed ourselves. So now, there's a bright spot as well. You know, there's a bright spot. Etunda is not stopping. I mean, it's not stopping at growing food. They are not just growing food. They are trying to process it as well. To process it also. They already mill maize into mill, and are planning to set up a juicing plant for mangoes. Now, that's the kind of value addition President Nandindaitwa actually recently emphasized during the launch of the National Development Plan 6. So the idea is to move Namibia from being a raw producer to being a manufacturer, from exporting crops to selling finished product. That's the idea. If Etunda succeed at producing, at processing, it could create steady jobs and stronger local markets. And that's the whole idea. And why can't we do that? But scaling that model across other green schemes will take a lot of funding. It will take a lot of funding. It will take coordination. It took accountability as well. So not just good intention. It doesn't just take good intention. So you can have a good intention, but then other things are missing. Funding, for example. Accountability, for example. So it will take that. So, and maybe other things that we actually haven't looked at, or they haven't been mentioned in the story. So let's dig into what we not being told. All right. And this is not digging to my colleague journalist. There are things that when you look at the story now, I think there are things that are very important when it comes to, you know, to this whole, to the green schemes. For example, first, transparency. Okay? That's one thing that we've spoken quite often here. So transparency, we often hear about success stories when things go well. Okay? A bumper harvest, like you know, our journalists, we get all these stories. There will be a bumper harvest of 400 tons, you know, potato, a new crop there, you know, all that kind of stuff. But less is said about failures and inefficiency with the grain schemes. How many, this is the question now, how many of these projects are truly profitable? If you know, please do come through and really tell us that, you know, they are really profitable. How many of them, you know? So how many of them are truly profitable? How many quietly? So you hear the funding now. You hear the potato being, and this, I'm not just only talking about a tunda, you know. You hear now, yeah, we're about to harvest 400 tons of you know, there's a noise about that. But how many quietly fade after a few seasons? There will be some time where you don't even hear a tunda anymore. Eh? Or Dongalinena or Vungu Vungu. Some of them just don't come up on top of my head. So, do you understand? That's a very important thing. As I said, there's less said about failures and inefficiency. And this has started long time ago. This etunda has been there. It has been there for quite a long, like other schemes as well. But are they making a dent in our food security? Are they? Remember, we're talking particularly just potato. Of 36 or 30,000 tons, we only contribute about 34%, around 8,000 something tons. So that's something to think about. And remember, as I said earlier on, you know, the dependency is the issue here, not the harvest of 400 tons of potato. Now, secondly, I would allow you to come through. So I see my phone is already flashing. So second thing is sustainability. Okay? Now, sustainability, etunda relies heavily on irrigation. Okay? Now, that means water. And water is becoming an increasingly a scarce resource in Namibia's dry climate. So are we managing our rivers now and underground sources responsibly? Because we could dry that up. We could with large scale irrigation farming eventually strain those resources. We could be straining those resources. So sustainability is also, because we can't have the government always, you know, subsidizing that. You know? So at one point, it should be self-sustaining. And thirdly, the dependency that I talked earlier. But if we rely on state support, that's what I'm saying. If we rely on state support or donor funding to keep green schemes alive, are they really sustainable? Eh? Sometimes maybe we need to put money somewhere else rather than on this if we are not really ready to go on a scale where that helped to put a dent in our food security. Are they really sustainable? Or do we need a new model? Maybe we need a new model, one that blends private investment with a public oversight. So there's also a story of public partner. Maybe we can look at the story of Karibib, eh? That private partnership. That public-private partnership. So maybe we need a new model, one that really look at the blending private investment with public oversight. So now, these are tough questions. I mean, these are tough questions, but they are worth asking. They are worth asking because they determine whether etunda's 400 tons of potatoes are a beginning or just another blip, you know, in a long line of projects that never quite, you know, reach their full promise. So that's something that we need to think. All right. So Namibia, what do you think? Let me hear from him.
Very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mike.
Yes, good morning.
It's good, yeah.
How are you? How was your weekend?
My weekend was great.
Are you a soccer supporter? Are you a soccer fan?
Yeah, partially.
Oh, okay. Mm. So you probably don't rejoice.
When I don't have anything to do, so I tend to watch soccer.
Oh, okay. No, I thought...
Yeah, but I was also a soccer player. I love sports soccer, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just now I have aged, so
okay.
I can no longer play. But I have a team also in the north.
Oh, okay.
Mm. That I support, yeah. You know, sometimes I don't know who make decisions.
Yeah.
I don't know whether we like jumping on conclusions or we like new things, or we don't look around us and see what we really consume.
Yeah.
Or we just do something because we can do it. Mm. Or maybe it can attract attention or something like that. I have always spoken, trying to compare or have a statistics of what kind of food do we really consume in this country.
Yeah. Potato is one of them.
I don't think so.
Really?
It can be. Look.
At many feasts, whether it's funeral or weddings and all, many feasts, potato is very, it's essential food there.
When the country was severely affected by drought,
yeah,
what did you get from those who supported you?
Nothing.
You didn't get potato.
No.
What did you get?
What was it actually?
Maize meals.
Yeah.
75% of our maize meals comes from South Africa.
Mm.
Why don't we prioritize on that first and then cut that one?
Yeah.
Rather than potatoes. Yeah, we cannot. Let's close down potatoes. But let these projects run on parallel. But the priorities is the one that you consume first. You consume the most. How long does it stay for do we have mechanisms to put value added.
Mm.
And how long does potato stay before it rottens?
If you have market, definitely. If you have market, there was this what story that we covered.
I saw a lot of them rotten.
We have that what cover? What did we cover that have already?
And even after thingy, but yeah. I'm saying that we have tried some comes in from South Africa and Botswana for maize meals.
Yeah.
And then you have the four old regions. You have Kavango, you have Zambezi.
Mm.
What they mostly consume is maize meals and mahangu. Why don't we put prioritize on that one? When we are affected, because these are foods that we can sustain in the first time.
Yeah.
And they can stay longer in the storerooms or on the silos.
Mm-hmm.
Like mahangu, I know, or even maize meal.
Yeah.
2 years or 3 years. It can be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe someone who something that we need to talk about more. What is preventing? So maybe I need to get deep into it. What is really, when you look at we are so dependent, especially, And this is what the founding father actually said, something that he emphasized in terms of, like, if we can't feed ourselves, how can we be a nation that cannot be able to feed ourselves? So if you depend on...
Yeah, because in my opinion,
yeah,
when it comes to me myself, before I produce something else, I have to produce what I mostly consume, me myself.
Yeah.
And this is where I say you have almost 75% of the countries consume mahangus and maize meals. Even here in Windhoek, at the end of the month, if you start counting in every store bucket, there is a maize meal, 10 kg or 20 kg.
Mm.
I mean, you look at that statistic and that gives you the necessities of what you have to produce.
So it's evidence, actually. Clear evidence.
There's data evidence, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Then that creates a necessity. Okay, this is what we eat. You see? Because this is what we get from India, from China, from Europe, from wherever. We don't get potatoes.
Mm.
Eh?
But it looks like, and this is something that that maybe we need to find out. It looks like that importing than actually producing ourselves, it's actually cheaper than we produce.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and therefore we become comfortable importing than actually producing our own food.
One thing that I have realized, most of us, is like us, the Bamboo peoples, we don't respect ourselves and we don't like our things. We like other people's things. That is the problem. And that is the reason why we don't even know whether we can add values to the product, to the food that we somehow produce.
Mm.
Yeah. We snap and licking our fingers for others' food, those that are of GMOs, while we have our own organic foods.
Yeah.
You see, and this is the problem. But what I actually thought is that first we have to look at what we eat, what we consume ourselves. Do we produce enough for us?
Mm.
They say majority counts. If I say 75% of the nations consume maize meals and mahangu, and we have 75% of maize meals coming from South Africa, don't you see that need?
Yeah. So the other,
perhaps maybe the land that they grow the potatoes maybe is not that suitable to the maize mills in Mahangu. Is that what they are saying?
Of course, I mean they have to look at the land that is suitable. Yeah.
But in Africa, for me, in Africa, every land in Africa is fertile.
Yeah,
every land in Africa is fertile.
It depends on the crop.
And we are much more convinced, you know, and there is these things. People don't want, I mean, the outside world does not want Africans to be food securities.
Yeah.
And then they come up with this,
When you are the one who's give, you are the one in control and you can say anything and the other person just have to jump. You just have to how high I jump.
Yeah, you know, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. But you know why I'm saying we don't like that of us. We don't like it at all. We are much more convinced that the outsiders or those things that are not linked to our traditional security foods are not good. You know, Africa, our land is already fertile. And then we don't need that fertilizers that actually is from a lab or something like that. And this is what we actually now want. Yeah, but what we are actually doing, we are destroying our land.
Yeah.
Because you are actually getting something from Europe, apparently it's fertilizer. And at the end of the day, when you don't have that, Your crops are no longer growing like they used to be. But we have manures, the cattle manure, the chicken manures, the goat manures. Those are organic manures.
Yeah.
But we don't make use of those ones.
For a larger scheme like this, that won't be sufficient.
It doesn't make sense. What do you mean by that? We can have more cattle. And you don't need a lot of it. Look at, let me tell you, in the north, there is a man, a businessman. His name is Tatengelata. That just paid Onyanya. That man have got a Mahangu field, which is just about, it's not that big. I think it's 4 soccer field together, or 3 or 4. That man always put that manure there, just small. But you see, the Mahangu that he produce, it's a lot compared to the bigger field, you see?
Yeah,
and they are much more bigger and strong.
But if we have modern way of boosting our production, why can't we use it?
I don't know. This is the problem where I'm saying we like other people's things, and then those people, they are bringing things that are made out of the lab, and then they will make your land unfertile. Your land is already fertile. You don't need that much of manure.
Yeah.
You just need small. Just small. But we go out there and then go and get those things from America, from where, and then at the end. You must see what is happening in Kenya and in Botswana, in Zimbabwe. Those people can no longer produce things. It's because they use this
fertilizers?
GMO, hybrid, the so-called of the hybrid fertilizers, and then they were given this seed that are not having that you can only grow them once. They don't, those products, when they grow, they don't have, even if it's Mahangu.
Yeah.
So we have our own traditionals of taking seeds. You look at, okay, this is a big Mahangu, it grows out, so I take this one. You choose them, and at the end of the day, when you are to cultivate, you make use of that one. We throw that away.
Yeah, but the demand to produce for market, that will be too much to meet.
You can't produce for market. You can't produce for market while you can't produce enough for yourself.
Yeah.
The government, perhaps, maybe, like the Tunda or whatever, must produce for market. I think so. It's just like when I'm telling you,
this is now, my question now. Should the government continue funding the large scheme, the large green schemes like a Tunda, or should more invest in small-scale community-driven farming?
I don't know who's operating in the Tunda, whether it's the government or is it private or something like that. I don't know. But what I am saying is that the government has got more farmers.
Mm.
What we need to do first is to produce what we mostly eat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not saying we mustn't produce potato. We must do it. We need it. Yeah, but 95% of the countries consume more of the two products that I have mentioned, mango and maize meals.
Yeah.
And then we have trucks that are always coming in from South Africa and Botswana bringing in maize meals. We can take that market for ourselves, cut that, produce that.
Yeah.
Why is it everybody now is just potatoes, 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 potatoes? Everything that I hear now is just potatoes. As if we can store potatoes, Moshigandi, Karamonandi, Mwidirindatu, and so on. Yeah?
All right. So I think your point is clear. Yeah?
Thank you, boss.
Thanks for coming through.
Okay.
All right.
Very good morning to you. Welcome to This is Unpacking the Day. And we're talking potato. Potato, potato, potato. Now, that's also my question. I'm asking also about, so should government continue funding this large green scheme like Etunda and others, or should it invest more in a small scale, you know, this community-driven farming? Maybe that would make more impact. Or can large irrigation farms really make a dent in our import bill? Eh? Can it make a dip? For now, it hasn't. It hasn't made a dent in our import bill. Eh? As one crop, 160 million, just for one crop. So, or are we, would we be better off focusing on crops that, like as he's saying, maybe what he's saying, that makes sense, that we focus more on crops that thrive more naturally in our climate. Hmm? Maybe you're a farmer yourself, okay? Could be a farmer yourself, or maybe you are, you have tried growing potatoes and maize and understand the cost firsthand. Maybe you know how much it costs. And what is your experience? Give us a call. Give us a call on telephone number 0833-66091 or 0833-66091. We're coming to you live from Ondangwa Studio. Give us a call.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Yes, this is Eagle FM. And if you're just joining us, thank you for coming on board. We are already moving. And yeah, we're talking about Etunda. Etunda's 400 tons of potato. Actually, it reminds us that Namibia can grow its own food. Okay? But scaling that up, well, of course, will take more than sunshine and soil. So it takes smart policies. It has to take smart policies. It has to take reliable infrastructures. It takes, you know, and strong push for value addition. So that strong push for value addition, that's what eventually takes. So because at the end of the day, food security isn't just about what is on our plate. So it's not only what up to now. Somebody told me it's about who controls the means to produce it. It's about who control the means to produce it. It's not what on your plate, but who. Food security is about who controls the means to produce it. Do we, like now, do we control? Are we actually in control of our own production? No, we are not. We are not in control of our own production. It's quite minimal that we contribute. So what is your take? What is your reaction to that? The story is in today's edition of The Villager. Please make sure that you subscribe to The Villager, and it, you will be receiving your copy, your digital copy every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So make sure that you just send a WhatsApp message with your name and email to 081-244-0101. 08-200-41-44. 08-200-41-44. So, all right. So, yeah, that's what you need to do to get your own copy of The Villager. So, don't stay behind. Don't stay behind, you know. So this is a place where you can find your latest economic and business news. So make sure that you subscribe. All right. So our time is about 1 minute past the hour of 9, and we're still waiting for you. If you would like to react to our first item, 08-333-66-091. And you are mostly welcome to come through. Otherwise, we get to our second item, which is also highly, very interesting story that in one of our daily newspaper, you know. Yeah, so welcome, and if you're just tuning in, you know, this is Unpacking the Day, where we take a closer look at the stories making headlines in Namibia, in the region, and elsewhere in the world, and unpack what they really mean for our daily, you know, daily lives. And in this segment, then, we are diving into a story that got, I think, everybody talking again, you know, the land reform. Yep. Yes, you heard that right. Land. Okay. Now, this is one topic that never seemed to leave our national conversation. This topic has been on the table for years. Now, so a new proposed law, is before Parliament. All right. So proposing now, promising to speed up the process of redistributing farmland to right the wrongs of our colonial and apartheid history. Now, land reform has always been emotional. I think it has been always emotional. It touches on identity, touches on justice, touches on survival, it touches on dignity, all right? So, but after 35 years of independence, many Namibians are asking, how far have we really come? How far have we really come? And more importantly, who has truly benefited? Have you? Who have truly benefited from a land reform? So, yeah, there's this article, that actually looking at that I would like us to, you know, this is from one of the daily newspapers, and this is, I want us to look at that, because there are important things that comes out of that article, okay, that I want you to think about, okay, because it's very, very interesting. So now maybe let's have a quick recap of where we are. Since independence, government has poured hundreds of millions of dollars into buying farm from white owners and resettling black Namibians. All right? So the idea was simple, to fix the deep inequalities of land ownership. Do you understand? That is the bottom line. Fix that deep inequalities of land ownership. And but here's the uncomfortable truth. All right, critics says the result haven't lived up to the promise. So he said, well, that was the goal, that was the idea, but have we lived up to that promise? You can come through and say, yes, we have, you know, in some way we have, of course. Many farms handed over through resettlement. So, and some of these are no longer productive. So the handover has been done, resettlement has been done, but are they productive? Some reportedly become weekend retreats for the well-connected, you know, the so-called weekend farmers. Yeah? The weekend farmers. So the weekend comes, you know, I'm going to the farm. It become weekend farmers. So, meanwhile, you know, if you now have to put this in perspective, meanwhile, you have half of our population still struggling with food insecurity. So, but you have some people that have now, you know, made this farm, which could have been, you know, used for food security, becomes actually weekend farmers. So we have half of our population still struggling with food insecurity. And that is one in every two Namibians not getting enough to eat. One in every two Namibians. So with this new bill, a parliament says it wants to fix the old problems. Now, but will it really? Will it really? Maybe that's something that we need to unpack. All right? So will it really fix the old problems? Now, what is in the bill? Maybe that's this is where we can start. So what actually is in the bill? What is in this bill? Now, the bill proposed, the proposed law would ban foreign nationals from owning farms outright, you know, owning farms outright. It also gives government more power to expropriate land. Well, not without compensation. So like we are not South Africa or Zimbabwe. So taking it with compensation for redistribution. So that's what is in the bill, you know. And on the surface, this sounds fair. Why should foreign absentee owners hold on to massive tracts of Namibian land while citizens go without? I think that's as I said, on the surface, that sounds fair. So, but here's the big concern, okay? Now, the bill, it doesn't clearly explain who will get the land next or how government will stop, you know, previously you have some political connected individuals from capturing the process again. So it doesn't. It's very vague in that. So if we have learned, really, if we have learned anything from past experience, it is that good intention can be derailed. Good intention can be derailed. Nice policy can be derailed. You know, as we have, maybe the president, for example, have a really good intentions. You genuinely see that there's good intention. As many other presidents that we had. But those intention, good intention can be derailed by corruption or a lack of oversight. Most importantly, a lack of oversight. So we kind of like start things and we leave it to magically control itself, you know? So, now remember some farm bought under previous program ended up back in private hands, you know? Sometime even sold back to the state. When he sold back to the state at inflated price. So that's not reform. Somebody told me that is not reform. That is recycling privilege. Yeah, that's actually recycling privilege. So now I want us to think a little bit broader. Okay. Let think broadly. Okay. So Namibia has about 3 million people. And roughly a third of them are considered food insecure. A third of that populations are food insecure. That means around 1 million people regularly face hunger or malnutrition. So, and At the same time, we have a vast area of farmland lying idle or being underused. So, another thing is that, just to put this together, so let's think broadly. Now, another thing is that, and these are some of the point that article actually highlight. So another thing is that the country's urban population has also exploded from about 35% in 2021, in 2011, to nearly 50% today. So think of town like Ochivarongo, Wintu, Ochivarongo, Ungwediva, are growing faster than ever. Yet housing remains one of the biggest challenge. Now, here's the thought now from the article. So the article now is that if government plans to spend $4 billion buying 243 farms from foreign owners, could that same money be used to address urban housing shortage instead? Well, what do you think? So by one estimate, that amount could actually service 100,000 plot for families to build a home. That amount of money can actually service around 100,000 plot for family, for people to build their homes. And imagine what that could mean. Well, it could mean stability. It could mean dignity. Well, having a home is a question of dignity. And a chance for ordinary Namibian to own property in expanding towns. So, it's someone like the previous caller. The caller said, it's priority, kind of. Where do we need to focus? Where do we have evidence of, you know? So that's the idea that actually they bring him forth. So, yeah, and maybe, just maybe, that would do more. Sometimes that would do more to close the gap, the inequality gap, than another round of political charged farm deals. So what do you think about that idea? So that's one area that maybe that amount of money really should be, you know, should be invested into housing. And by calculation is that would actually service about 100,000 plot, you know, for house building. And that would make more difference. That would make more a social difference in a community than probably actually buying the 243 farms from foreign owners. It's an idea that's really worth looking at, worth noting. Now, so there is a tension here, okay? Maybe let's unpack the tension that are here. First is justice versus productivity. You know, now, yes, land reform is about correcting historical injustices. All right? It's about correcting historical injustices. But what happened when we transfer land without ensuring that it stays productive? And there are a lot of examples of this. So where this program have actually then resettled people, and far now those farms are more like deserted and there's no productivity. It used to be productive. The farm used to be productive. But then when it's transferred, and the farm becomes unproductive. Well, you can say people who have been resettled, they are not given equipment, and well, there's so many things. There are so many things that we can talk about. So the whole question here is that we risk creating a feed, you know, that kind of feel-good political moment. Eh? So, yeah, it's kind of like we risk actually creating a feel-good political moment that does little to improve condition for the majority. So politically, that may feel good, but that would improve actually. It's like this. Let's say, for example, you take this farm is owned by a white person. It's used to produce whatever. Let's say we were talking about potatoes that actually feed our market. Okay, and then you compensate the white farmers, and then now you resettle people, and there's nothing coming out. Now, those of us who used to be in that environment where you buy potatoes, now we can't buy potatoes anymore because there's nothing that is coming, you know, coming from that farmer anymore. There's nobody who produces that anymore. So that's why I said there is this tension, justice versus productivity. How do you deal with that? So, and in this case, as I tell you, may just looking at the feel-good political moment, which actually does little. It would do little to actually improve living condition for the majority of people. So, and then the other tension is ownership versus access. Now, do Namibia? This is very important. Do Namibia want land to farm? Do you want a land to farm? Or do most simply need a foothold, a piece of land, to live on, to run small business, to be independent? Yeah? So that's the question.
Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, Mike.
Good morning.
I'm back again.
Yeah.
With regard to the farmers, that farmers might be given to those who does not want to produce, and perhaps maybe those that the farmers were taken away from them, they were producing.
Yeah.
You know, I like doing my own research. There is a man, a white man.
Yeah.
Here in Windhoek on your way to Dunfermline. This man sells, animal, food productions.
Mm.
Yeah, so I normally used to go there and buy things, and then one day I happened to ask him, because he mentioned something very, very important, because he said he was working for Landbo. Now, Landbo, I think it was Ministry of Agriculture by that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, now, what he told me was completely different to what we actually now have in place.
Yeah.
Whereby he said, during the colonial era, or the previous government, the white government,
yeah,
the land completely belonged to the state. That is what he told to me.
Yeah.
But those who were actually interested in farming were given farm and also empowered in terms of monies and everything.
Mm.
But the land does not belong to you.
Yeah.
The land belongs to the state, and what guarantee you that you stay on that land is what you produce.
Yeah.
So if you are farming cattle, so goats, or maize meal, each year you have to produce and send a letter through your NAMPOST telling the Department of Agriculture that you have this so much that you have produced, and you want the government to come and take that. The government then has to find a market for you.
Yeah.
And wrote a letter for you. I mean, if there is others that are not good, or maybe they, something like that, they will tell you, look, let me say, for instance, it's cattle. We find out that one of your cattle was having a disease, so we dispose it.
Yeah.
And this is what you get.
they will write you a letter of which you are going to get from the government. They check from the government.
Yeah.
That they have sold your cattle or your goats or whatever that you are farming. And this is what you get out of that.
Yeah.
And they saying things were going very well because they left that ministry with a lot of money.
Mm.
That is what he was telling me. So anybody can go to that man and ask him about 7 billion to 8 billion or 9 billion that he has left there.
Yeah.
So now what we have, if a person like me happened to get the farm, it is very, very difficult for me to maintain it because I was not empowered.
Exactly.
Yeah, if I am empowered, if I happen to be fortunate enough to be part of the elite, I have money already, then to me it's no longer, you know, we have this, these things of, it's no longer for me, there's no reason for me to produce and whatever, do those things. So that's why you see most of the farmers now, they have become holiday resorts and so on, you see.
Yeah.
And that is the problem because it's my private property. I can do whatever I want to
it's
do.
A weekend
my,
farmer.
It's a weekend farmer, obviously.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah. It's exactly the same way with those that benefit from the natural resources.
Yeah.
Let me give you an example again. Of fishing quotas. 90% or 95% of those that having fishing quotas don't see a need for them to come up with something like value added.
Hmm.
Because they are already getting money.
Exactly.
And they are getting easy money, sitting back at home. Each and every month the money comes in.
Yeah.
So why does he have to go and set up a factory or mobilize those that they are having there are fellow Namibians that are having fishing quotas and say, let's put money together and set up a factories here.
Mm.
Most of our fishing, Lucky Stars and all those things, most of them, they are assembled today, processed today in South Africa.
In South Africa, yeah.
You see? And this is what we are talking about. When the government says, okay, they needed the locals to benefit direct. But we are saying because it's a national resources that belong to each and everybody, everybody must benefit one way or another. The state must take...
But we also assume that we can do value addition. But we assume because we believe, in our mind, we think the resources belong to us. But much of our resources doesn't belong to us.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
you see, the fishing quotas. Most of those that have them, they sold their fishing quotas to the Indians,
yeah.
And the Indians tracking those. They are taking those fishes to Zambia, Botswana, and DRC. No value added.
Yeah. No value added. As I said.
Yeah. No value added.
Yeah. So.
And this is what we are talking about.
Yeah, and even if, as I said, and maybe I'm just repeating myself, and the good intention is not implementation. So it requires really a policy and oversight of that policy to really make a dent. So, or to be able to implement what you want. Because otherwise you can just talk, but if the system remains the way it is, there's nothing that's going to change.
Nothing. Obviously nothing.
Yeah.
Because the government does not even go there and say, look, you guys, you have been having a fishing quota for 10 years.
Yeah.
What have you done?
And there's no limit to, okay, you're only given a fishing quota for this period of time.
Yeah.
Or is there a limit? I'm not too sure.
The main purpose was actually to financially empower them. So that they can...
Disadvantage. This is also another something.
It is an advantage, obviously.
Yeah. At
but
this point
now,
in time, when we're talking about the disadvantaged, who are the ones? Because those who are disadvantaged.
And this is
now,
the reason where we are saying a state, in order for them to have power upon these things or to govern this, to say, look, if you are not doing what you are supposed to do, what we want you to do, we're going to take this away. Yeah. Just like what the white man tells me, that 2 years without producing anything, they will take that away from you.
Yeah, exactly.
And
you
will have no reason because the policy is already there.
Yeah.
You see, we have peoples with huge land. It just, they go there and shoot and shooting range or whatever. They go there, it's a holiday, what. And the land is there.
Yeah, and actually, we have
an example. There's nothing that is happening.
Example, we have example of those, the elite who bought the farm and they haven't used it. And when they sell it, they haven't upgraded. They sell it more, 3 times than what they bought it to the government, you know?
It's a private. You know, in a world of capitalism, you would wonder as to how things are being done, obviously. Once you go through and try and find out, how are we going to control this?
Yeah.
Eh? How are we going to control this? The state needs to put a strong mechanism there or a policy that says, look, we gave you this.
Yeah.
And this is the reason we gave it to you. And you have to do it. And if you're not doing it, obviously we're going to take that away from you.
Mm. Yeah.
So because people are now taking advantage. You cannot come. Now they would even clip, even the government. There was a video circulating of, NAMWATER's workers. So they were trying to fix a pipe that ran through that. And then a councillor for that matter is telling the NAMWATER's workers, look, this is my private property. So you don't have any restrictions to come here.
To come here.
You rather have to come to the people. They say, look, but the people in the locations, the people in Ontario, wherever, they don't have water. They need water.
Yeah.
Eh? He's chasing them away.
Yeah, it's a private property. Yeah.
So I think things that are only supposed to be, and I want people to do their research and try and compare as to how things are actually being run in the world of socialism.
Exactly. Communism.
Yeah, we need to find out.
Yeah.
We need to find out.
All right.
And this is where we say, when you say you want to nationalize things, you want to statalize things so that the government can have overall government in terms of production. We cannot have idle farmers there given to those elite or peoples and then they will lay back and say, I have now this one. One day if I want to sell it, I can sell it for 30 million and then I have money, but the land needs to be worked.
Exactly.
The land needs to produce.
Yeah. Doesn't matter who.
Yeah.
White or black or green.
Resources need to benefit each and everybody one way or another.
Yeah.
If you're having fishing quota, try and employ people. Set up a factory. Add the value to that so that the government can, at the end of the day, get money from there to build up a national budget so that somebody can have adequate classroom, so that somebody can have adequate health facilities and medicines, water, go to schools and everything that the state needs to do. This is what we want to, because we cannot have people just having natural resources. Like I said the other time, somebody's having a national resources, a license, because he doesn't have money, he sell it, and then automatically it becomes 100% owned by a foreigner.
Yeah. Hmm.
The state must have power. They must hold at least a certain percent.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming through.
Okay, bye.
Yeah.
So you're most welcome to come through as well. Our telephone number is 0833-66091, 0833-66091. Yes, and I was talking about tensions that I see, you know, through this. So I talk about justice, you know, versus productivity. Yes, the land reform is about correcting historical injustices. So, but we're going to continue.
Very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Osoveri. How are you?
I'm fine. And how are you, Uncle Bona?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. You say the land to reside on, I don't know what land. Is it for farming? Is it for dwelling? Though all are important, necessary to us.
Yeah.
But, we're able to listen to Kanzi Okampo Anyoga's morning show this morning, from 6.
No, I didn't listen. I listened to the early morning scoop? Was it in the early morning scoop?
No, it was during David.
I only listened towards the end, yeah.
Yeah, he does come in some days. I think it's also very important for us to be listening to him. His teaching, how he's talking about the economic model that are there to guide us in our implementation of our actions.
Yeah.
Especially when he was talking about, you know, he always talks about this economy of scales and how we can seriously utilize those sector of production, especially land. But when you look at from the historical perspective, so here, of course, there was no government. That we know already. There's no argument. It was only an administrative kind of, authority.
Yeah.
So the example given, we know already that the white compatriots, colleagues, they were not disadvantaged.
Yeah.
Whether in terms of land or finance and things like that. The department that he was working on is not even a ministry. They were having those departments.
Yeah.
So today we have freight ministries.
Yeah.
So now the land for us, we also, I think we are privileged. And I thank God for how these people did it, our forefather, that we have communal land there.
Mm.
And this communal land can also be turned into commercial. So this one of ours, our portions are even little, smaller. So we can really organize ourselves, mobilize ourselves, and then start producing agri-produce there.
Yeah.
So, of course, this one is also needed. Maybe the fact that the reason why those people are not...
Uncle Bona, they're also what are people that are saying that, the reform has... People have been resettled, which is actually a good thing. Yeah, but the people who are resettled, these farmers, this farm has been producing... But after the people that were resettled, because maybe they were not given the equipment or they were not trained or they were all that kind of things. There are so many factors that contribute to that. The farm become unproductive.
Yes, those ones that they resettled. What about the one that were not resettled, the one that we have at our village is there? Those ones are resettled, I understand. We did some reviews of policies like agriculture, for example. Agribed. And all those who are settled, we know that they were lacking skills, they couldn't produce, a lot of issues. That were also a challenge. So, but we are now talking about those who are not resettled, like ourselves, in the villages there. Are we making our land, our community, our communal area there productive, like we used to do?
Yeah,
so the white colleagues in the past era, so they were favored. That's why they were producing. For us now, even if we are to get some little loan, if you have a pottery project or whatever, or agua project that you can do, maybe the license, you're getting the quotas, maybe might be difficult for us. Can't we also start within our own communal area there and turn that land into commercial?
That's a good question, yeah.
So the models are there. So the land that, of course, people bought And then, of course, the government got a lot. And sometimes the government has money and the people are not willing to produce. But whoever then got that money and buy it, and as an individual property, then we ourselves who might think that it's not well utilized. And then, of course, so you can assess the person and say, fine, if we organize ourselves, can we not produce something that Dr. Kamwe is also producing, do you think? And many other. So for us now, can't we start at home? So the government is fine. It's subsidizing some of this, and it's even settling the thing. People in the government, in the previous administration, the apartheid system, they were not even settled. So those are some of the models created for us now to start doing something and ask for the, maybe those guys, those young ones who have got a loan. I mean, what is it? The National Youth Funding Scheme.
Yeah.
So maybe they are also now going to focus on our communal area, start producing, sustaining those supply chain, add the value to those products. So maybe we ourselves as economists or whoever, spectators, can also suggest to the councillor that yes, these guys can also produce food here. A little bit rather than looking at this side, the way we don't even have control.
Yeah.
So let's start with our own. So we should be able to understand that, yes, if we know our history, sometimes we can start. The person is telling you in the previous government, which government was here?
Yeah.
Good.
All right. Thanks, Iman, for coming through.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. You're most welcome to come through. Our telephone number is 0833-66091, 0833-66091. All right. So now things that we, as I said, you know, coming out of that article, so that we can look at is the, as I said, there are tensions, you know, some in a good way, when you're looking at it, you know, for us, as I said, I make that point of justice versus actual productivity. And as I said, land reform in itself, it's about correcting the historical injustices, you know. But what happened when we transfer land without ensuring it stay productive, you know? So we risk actually creating, as I said, that good, you know, feel-good political moment, but then not much has actually improved, you know, not you haven't improved the living condition for the majority. I think that's an issue one need to look at. The other thing is ownership, you know, versus access. All right. And this is very important to think about. Yeah, you can come and tell me. So do Namibians want land to farm? All right. Do we want land to farm, or do most simply need a piece of land to live on, one, to run maybe a small business, and to be independent. That's all what you need, because think of the rent and other things. So if you have your own piece of land where you can live on, where you can start your small business, do Namibians want land to farm, or they just want a piece of land where they can live on? Now, think of the urban that we talk about, the urban migration trend. If we see the trend, the urban migration trend, it actually suggests, like maybe the other caller said, there are evidence. This actually suggests that people are moving towards cities, not toward rural farm. So people are moving towards cities, not towards rural farms. So we have to speak about urban land and how we can have, you know, provide people with land in urban area. So, now, thirdly, the short-term politics and versus long-term planning. Now, a law that sounds tough on paper can easily become a tool for political gain sometimes. You know, returning the land to the people is a powerful slogan. You know, return the land to the people. In other countries, that's the same. You know, but what is exactly counts as people You know, what does that count? You know, if we don't have a clear, transparent system, that phrase becomes dangerously, you know, that phrase becomes dangerously vague. You know, it becomes dangerously vague because, you know, there are those who can actually manipulate that. And you, as we have seen it, not only in Namibia, but in other countries as well. Yeah? So, and there's a fear factor. Now, that also highlighted in the article, the fear factor, both local and foreign investors, watch this debate closely. You know, when the rules around land ownership seem uncertain, investor drops. So, and that means fewer job, definitely, when the investment, whether it's local or foreign. So when they are not investing because of ambiguity of policy and law, that means fewer job, less tax revenue, and less development are all around. So that is another aspect that they highlight. So will the bill aims to fix inequality? Poor implementation could actually deepen it. So that's the thing, that we'll have a new bill that want to fix that inequality, but the problem would be the implementation. So that's always the problem. So, Ben, well, think about the average Namibian family now. Now, so in informal settlement around Windhoek, you know, people line up for water, you know, build zinc houses, and wait years for promised plot. Now, meanwhile, we see $1 million farm transaction taking place in silence, so often benefiting insiders. Do you understand?
Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine today, man. As long as I beat Liverpool, that's better.
It's like you guys will win the Champions League. I'm seeing the post and
we won the Champions League, my dear, by beating
I'm
Liverpool.
Telling you. But anyway, at least you'll give us a favor. I'm the Arsenal supporter.
I'd rather have Arsenal actually winning the title than Liverpool.
That's the thing. But I think this year maybe we'll make it, man.
It's your year every year, and you never make it anyway.
I think on Twitter, if you didn't make it this time, then you have to go.
All right.
Anyway, Mike, when it comes to land distribution, I think Namibia, there are people who are sitting on, I don't want things to happen. Because if you look, most people are not really trying to have farms. People just want a piece of land to live on.
Exactly.
So at least when you leave this, when you die, at least you know where your kids are secure.
Hmm.
When they come to property, they have something, a roof to call home. But if you are living in the area which we live in, where you are waiting even a homestead which you are having in the north to be demarcated a new town. It's really a pity when I'm looking at ourselves, especially who are from the north.
But sometimes, if you think of this resettlement, you know, some farms are far away from towns. Who would want actually to live on a farm where every day, or first of all, if it's about 100 kilometers or whatever before you get to the next town, how will you survive on that? Of course, people would, especially young people, wouldn't be on that farms, you know. It was meant for farming.
For farming.
Yeah.
Exactly. Only person who is a part of good, no, you don't need to settle people who are not going for farming. Because what I see, our government are settling people who don't really necessarily going to farm, but they are going just to live there. A farm is supposed to be farm. Seriously, because I saw
where the government are settling people, some of them don't even have a livestock.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are not even having that intention of what? Training people even to do cropping, crop farming.
Yeah.
They are not. But you find this farm, they used to be productive when they was on the hand of the owner before they been sold to the government. And the issue also with the government is that come when they are settling those people, they resettle, they mix them a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are having, let me say, Mike maybe is having like a goat, and me, I'm having some pigs, and now somebody come with a cat also.
Mm-hmm.
And now we are selling maybe like 5 hectare
mm-hmm.
piece of land. And the government, what they did, they didn't even demarcate that, Mike, you are here to end up here. It's like it's open to everybody.
Yeah.
Then I find sometimes my pigs are getting missing. The cattle of Mike also get disappear.
Yeah, imagine.
Those are things which, and it's what is happening.
Yeah. I mean, the security is not the same as the previous individual. Owner. Yeah, it's the previous
exactly.
owner.
Exactly. Yeah.
They have problem. Means to protect their property. But now you left it to people who have no means. Yeah.
Now that's why the research of farmers, they become what? A new established location.
Yeah.
Most of them, they do that. After we resettle, then everybody's coming to come and put up his capacity there. That is what is happening in the research of farms. But seriously, I think it's a hard time also the government to come up. Because we saw this.
But
people,
this is a new law now. This is a new law coming in. I mean, of course, we're talking about expropriate. For us,
yeah.
Expropriate without, it's not without compensation. It's compensation. It's still the same thing. Willing buyer, willing seller. You know, what difference would it make?
What?
You
know? It won't make anything. We can make a lot of what? Policy and after policy, which is not going to work because somebody who's sitting on the land, you know exactly how much it's worth and how I'm going to charge it. If I don't want to sell it, I'll demand more.
Exactly.
I'll demand more. What are we going to do as a government? The problem is that our government is sitting on the Article 3, where we support even to have a referendum.
But the target now is the owners that that are not even residing in the country.
We have a lot of them.
Yeah. They are targeting about 200 something farms, 240 something farmers.
Yeah, just imagine. And those people do.
Yeah.
Do you think some of them they are even willing to sell it? Because they are having even what do you call this? A private game, a safari hunting.
Yeah.
Mm. Where they send their cousin from who come and visit Namibia here. We fought even our Minister of Tourism are getting anything. Benefit out of it. Because the money stay where he is. Those guys come in handy doing their safari hunting. And they ship out. That's how it's happening. But seriously, I think even these people who are getting resettled, like our elite and our politicians, where they are getting, Mike, can you hear me?
I can hear you. You are the one who feels distracted. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. There was a guy here, man.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is that Mike, when you see our position, where they are, most of them they are the one who been resettled on those farms.
Yeah.
And what they do, they start a farm was productive. They start making charcoal. Just imagine now.
Cutting the trees.
Yeah, cutting the trees and making charcoal instead of having a production where it was used to be.
Mm.
I can give you one example where our former Prime Minister and they end up to sell it to the government.
Yeah.
With a lot of money. She make a lot of money out of it.
Mm.
And I don't know why now, even that farm up to now, it was on the newspaper where the people used to live there. Working for that, the former boss was before the land was bought.
Yeah.
They've been chased out. I don't know, by the government or maybe for the, by the prime minister, former prime minister. But up to now, those farmers are dilapidated, my friend. If you look at the building, how the things are falling apart.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the government are here looking for another farm. Why you don't do those one who are been bought by the government before to sell it, to put people there?
Mm.
Those are, we, our government are doing the farm the way we are doing.
Your network is now vibrating.
Hello? Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah. Mm.
You really, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I think for us, we need to come up with a referendum when it comes to our lands. Only way we are going to win it. Otherwise, with the way we are even making people to migrate to Windhoek, because we are making even Umfia to become a town, or Congo is the same.
Mm.
Then now, what do you expect people to live in if you are taking their land from the north?
Yeah.
Obviously, they will come to you. That's why we are in Windhoek. We are in Windhoek.
Mm. Yeah.
That's a problem, because now you are buying our land there. Well, I die, you take it or leave it, because that now is, there's no private. What you remember how the scandal become about to, like, where the president step in that, you know, you know, nobody's going to sell a land anymore here.
Yeah.
Because people realize that, you know, this new town we are proclaiming and we are buying from 200,000 our land, and they are selling for a plot going for 1 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why now they start selling by themselves. And that's why now if you look where they come up with a policy, no, nobody's going to sell it, and also it will be not sold the way it is supposed to be.
Yeah.
But most people, they benefit out of their land.
Of course.
But seriously, I think it's a hard time our government to come up with something. But I'm really supporting referendum.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it has
going to have
time.
Communal.
Yeah.
We can't have a land which is divided. But if it's a communal,
the other things that maybe we need to look. The need has changed. At the time of independence, I think the need were different to now. You know,
exactly.
And even when we're looking at the whole question of land, we have to look at the need now, because the evidence tells us people actually are migrating to towns.
Yeah.
Not to the farm, you know, not to the farm. You know,
exactly.
So we need to look at maybe more urban land, and, you know, and how we can, you know, provide land for people in township. Yeah.
In township, I'm telling you.
Mm.
And this is what I was saying, no. Especially when it comes to town. Town, they can even demarcate the people. They say, no, I'll give you a title deed. If you didn't build for 5 years, I will rebuild that elven to somebody else, because you are unable.
Yeah.
But they are not going to do that, because they know people, they're able to build by themselves. And we have a good example when it comes to Chuarongo. I don't know how Chuarongo they do it, but seriously, it's working.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, anyway, Mike, let me give you a last caller, opportunity.
All right. Thanks for coming through.
Okay, cheers.
Mm. So, yes, redistribution matters. It really matters. But without training, without finance, without infrastructure, it's not reform. It's absolutely not reform. It's a window dressing. So without those kind of things, training, finance, infrastructure, that's not reform. It is absolutely window dressing. So what would a meaningful land reform look like? How would it look like? So, what the article talks about, you know, mix of strategies. Productive farms should remain productive, whether they're owned by an individual or cooperatives or communities or black or white, it should remain productive. So idle land could be
you know, like repurposed for housing, maybe, you know, solar energy and agribusiness training centers. So those that are not doing anything, they could actually repurpose to be able to do that, especially agribusiness training centers.
Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking.
Bon dia, familia.
Kumwe.
Tudo bem, obrigado.
Ah, tudo bem.
Você também entende uma gesta, né?
Yeah.
Boa sorte, então. Boa sorte. Yeah, my brother.
So how are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How are you, brother?
I'm all right, all right.
My gesta win one game and all of the 10 games have been lost.
You see, we have to celebrate the little win we have, my friend, because it might take another 10 games without winning. So when it comes with a big team, so we pat ourselves at the back and, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
That's our Champions League match.
What's wrong, brother? Yeah, a time will come.
Yeah.
Yeah, the land issue.
Yeah.
Farming, and I was hearing some issues like they must remove the traditional leaders. The government must take control.
Yeah.
But if you look up that case, and men of the lawmaker, they think no. You know, if you remove the traditional leaders from the land, if you don't talk to them, you just come and grab the land and do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
So meaning the poor will be poor. This is the truth. Now, the poor will be poor how? Because in traditional land, I can own the land without even maybe paying this 600 or 500 or whatever we are paying. If now the government control the land, this new law come up, would be very difficult for you to have a piece of land.
Yeah, no, it would. I mean, think of where we are at this point in time, you know, and how far we come with the land, you know. What has changed? What really have changed?
I think the system just need to allocate everybody, and we don't have to forget where we come from.
Yeah. It just
we also
say,
respect our traditional leaders.
Yeah.
Even though they don't speak this English, but they are the leaders because they know and the system saying they should have that land from their ancestors. Now, if you come up to change the system to say you may put value and whatever, I'm telling you, the richer will be richer and the poor will be poor, and you and me. Mm. It would be very difficult for you to have a piece of land even together for two goats. Very difficult.
Yeah.
For
me, I always think, I was saying, look, it's because it should be a law that that when you turn, let's say, for example, when you turn 18, when you turn 18, you are entitled to a certain piece of, like we say, a certain hectare or square meter, it doesn't matter, you know, a certain square meter of land. All right.
Yeah.
So it should be in the constitution that every Namibian is entitled to a certain square meter of land. Now, what happened is that, so when you turn 18, they could then say, well, we have a piece of land for you in Keetmanswap. You understand?
Yeah.
So it could be anywhere. It's not that it should be from where you come from. It could be anywhere. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, well, if you decided, no, I don't want to go to Keetmanswap and you sold it, then the government has given you a land, you know, a piece of land to live on. You understand? So, that should be something that is a constitution, at least a piece of land for every individual, you know?
You know, all of these laws that we are coming now, they need to look because the questions you are giving now is need the traditional answer.
Yeah.
You can say, where are you going? But you need an answer from the past, and this law should cater for everybody. We must look at everywhere to say what's the benefit, what's the advantage you will have on this kind of activity. If you just think about money, then what? Then what about the people?
Yeah.
Just like, you know, you find people with the locations or in the areas, they don't have even a piece of land where they can live. But because the land has been removed from the traditional leaders, They are controlling the land. Now it's become a chaos. Those who have money, they are buying a piece of land. What about me?
Yeah. All right, man.
Oh, thank you, brother.
Thanks for coming through.
All right.
Well, my dear people, in a beautiful land of the brave, so we come to the end of our session today. And so as the parliament debate this proposed land reform bill, here's what we should all ask, okay? Here is what we should all ask. Who will really benefit, okay? It's a time that we all ask that question. Who will really benefit? Will this time be different, and how that will be different? And how do we make sure history, it doesn't repeat itself, with the same few getting richer while the majority watches from the sidelines? So I know this is a complex issue with no easy answers. The government has mandate to address historical injustice, but how it chooses to do so has a profound implication for the present and the future of Namibia. You have been listening to Unpacking the Day. So, and that brings us to the end of our discussion today. Let's do that tomorrow again. And I'm going to leave you in a good hand, capable hand of Mr. Franz. And from me, until tomorrow, goodbye.